Arati. And after that time, he moved to Hanover, well, first to Braunschweig and then to Hanover to join Reinhard Werner's group, where he's currently working. So his interests are in mathematical physics, and in particular, the study of covariant measurements, and in particular, about the study of covariant measurements for conjugate observables and the time observables, which will be actually the theme of today's talk. So thanks for me.
Thanks for the introduction.
So this is about a particular kind of energy time uncertainty relation, which is it holds for this framework for of absorbing detectors, and this is a joint work with Andreas Ruschaupt and Professor Werner, and we have also one experimentalist, Pete Smith, who contributed to the feasible experimental test for this thing. So here is an overview. So I will start with just first a short introduction to energy time uncertainty relations in general. This is a huge research field because it includes all this problem of time in quantum theory. So I'm just briefly explaining the background for our approach here, which is this absorbing detector thing. So you could think of detector sitting somewhere in space, then you prepare the wave function somewhere else, and then you wait until the detector absorbs the particle. And this is your result of the arrival time measurement. This is the idea here. And then we show that in this context you obtain this uncertainty relation. So we have first this basic type. This looks pretty much what you would expect, except maybe this factor P there, which comes from the fact that we allow also for the situation where the detector does not absorb everything. So it's possible that the detector does not notice every particle. So the total absorption probability will appear in this uncertainty relation. The other uncertainty relation is not really in the usual form because it refers to the expectation value rather than the standard deviation. But this is it's often maybe even more relevant if you consider, for example, some decay of a metastable state, which you measure by putting the detector near this atom, which is decaying, and then basically the mean arrival time would directly be the decay or the lifetime of this metastable state. So in this sense, this other relation is also interesting. Then you get different constant, then obviously. So since this is all about this result, it would be a little bit boring to just to state it because I've already done it. So I will also try to convince you it's actually true. So I will present a sketch of proof in the case where P is 1, and then I will shortly also try to explain how this factor ends up there. It's clear that it has to be somehow there because if the detector, for example, doesn't see anything, then nothing is happening and we cannot have any uncertainty relation. So somehow it has to be there. Then an obviously interesting question is also what sort of distributions saturate these inequalities. In the usual, for the usual position and momentum case, we know that the uncertainty relation is, or let's say uncertainty product is minimized by the Gaussian state. So it would be interesting to look at what sort of wave functions saturate these inequalities. And then there's a funny example. You can actually do this just by 2x2 matrices. And I will also show this one. Okay, so starting with this introduction, this is how obviously this sort of uncertainty relation should look like. Now, usually, well, yeah, I guess in most cases it's kind of invoked in the sort of hand-waving fashion, because all this problem I see in the problem of time and everything. And the first thing I would like to do is to state what sort of uncertainty relation we are looking at. So this delta T and delta E, they are now, they specifically refer to standard deviations of some probability distributions, which are obtained, like I put here. It's you have a wave function, then you prepare this wave function, and then you measure first. If you want first to get this, you just measure then energy, then you get some value, then you repeat the experiment like you always do in a statistical measurement, then you get the distribution, then you can compute this. And then you prepare the state again, and then you do the same thing for this time thing. So there is no reference to simultaneous measurements of quantity. So this is a preparation type uncertainty relation. And now, yeah, we know what the energy distribution is. We have just some Hamiltonian. But then we don't a priori really know what the T is. So this is what I have to specify next. So there are several possible ways to think about time. I mean, you could define time, for example, by some clock which measures it, like a periodic process which just counts the time by its lapses. But this is not what we are doing here. We are just, like I already said, we are looking at this detection time. You have a detector somewhere, and then you prepare the wave function. This is the psi, the initial wave function. And then we just wait, and the measurement ends when the detector clicks. And the time which comes out is then the time value which we take as an outcome of the measurement is simply the time between the preparation and the click. So that's the arrival time. Now, in quantum theory, there is, of course, this basic problem that... Sure.
You said you were limiting yourself to this kind of preparation uncertainty.
Yes.
Because in general, there are more meanings to the...
Yeah, sure, exactly, that's the point.
So you're not going to consider those...
No, this is specific result which only refers to preparation. So that only in this, well, I get to this eventually, so it's all only for this model. So this one...
Well, this is one model, but there's also... In the other uncertainty relations, there are other statements that go along with it, like if you measure the position to such and such an accuracy, you must disturb the momentum.
Sure.
Or
yes.
In the case of time energy.
In the case of time, it's the other kind of uncertainty is more difficult. We haven't. I mean, of course, one could think of doing the same thing here with this simultaneous measurement idea. Then you would have some way of measure of quantifying the disturbance caused by what first measurement, for example. But Well, so far we haven't done this. I mean, that's all I can say at this point. I mean, this is only about the preparation rather than the relation. So, okay, so the basic problem is, I guess everyone knows, is that we don't really have a time operator, at least in this. I mean, there are several there have been several candidates and so on, but this basic sense, it doesn't exist because the Hates has, our Hamiltonians usually have a semi-bounded spectrum, and then you cannot have canonical commutation relations. Now, the solution that we are taking is we use a POVM. Of course, there are other ways of thinking about this, but as we know from quantum information theory, POVM is a good description for observable in general, so why not use it here? And then once this is fixed, there are still different things you can do. And the first thing would be this covariance approach. So you would start axiomatically by defining this F would be then the POVM. And you would define it with this covariance condition with respect to the H, which just kind of formalizes the idea that if you make the time measurement, if you make the same time measurement with same preparation, first at some time and then at some time later, then what we should get is the same distribution, but just shifted with this time which is between. But this is just some interval. So we would, this POVM element would correspond to the event that the measurement outcome for the time would lie on this interval.
But if you just measure arrival time, what time? I mean,
this is just it's a continuous observable. So you cannot, the spectrum is continuous. You cannot give a discrete POVM element corresponding to one time.
So,
you always have to,
okay.
Yeah. You always have to make the statement in such a way that the outcome lies in some interval. That's why it's written like this. Yeah, so this just formalizes the idea that if you make the same time measurement with same preparation, time t later, then it's just the same distribution, just shifted. This is the axiomatic way of thinking about time. But this is not what we are doing here, partly because it's already solved. We already have the preparation uncertainty for this. Just take the Nyman dilation, and then you have the usual canonical operators. And the other thing is that this only applies when H has continuous spectrum. So in our case, we want to look at this a little bit more concrete approach. So we, instead of taking just this axiomatic thing, we try to put some description on the actual absorption process into the model. We are still not doing the detailed description of the detector, which would mean that we would look at the atoms in the detector surface. They would get excited and produce the.
On the fact that you need a continuous energy spectrum.
Well, basically, it's just when you do the Nyman dilation.
What's the Nyman dilation?
Well, it's the, if you have a POVM, you can always dilate it. Do I speak loud enough?
Yes.
So if you have a POVM, you can always dilate it into other Hilbert space, where it's the standard projection valued measure.
Oh, it's like something like purification.
Well, you could think of, you can dilate it to the tensor product, so you could think of it like a purification. In some way, there it's just it just goes into part of the system. So that's why it's not a contradiction to, you don't have a unitary dilation, you just have some isometry and you put it into part of the bigger system. And in the bigger system you have the canonical variables. And the spectrum has to match then. Because the canonical variables they have a spectrum over the whole line. So you also have to, they only have continuous spectrum, so also H must have continuous spectrum. That's why it's a restriction on this sort of thing.
And what about a harmonic oscillator or something like that? So
well, you don't have a continuous spectrum, but then you would have to, I mean, then you would have periodic translations here. You could have a phase observable for harmonic oscillator. This would be like a different way of thinking about time. It would be more like this clock way of thinking, because oscillator is periodic. But
well, I don't mean the harmonic oscillator as a clock. Well, anyway,
yeah, but
maybe
this
that's
what
not
would,
the main point for you.
You know, this is not the precisely because this is what I'm not going to discuss here. So I'm going to discuss this absorbing thing. So okay, so this is the absorbing detector model, and it could, in some way, it's already in this old paper by Alcock. But the formalism which we are using is not very surprisingly from one of the old papers by Reinhardt. So somehow the idea is that we put here, for example, in this picture, we would put here some localized complex potential which would correspond to this detector. And then it would really say that the detector is sitting right here. And it would be this D here. And we just add it to the Hamiltonian. And then what will happen is that it's no longer Hermitian, obviously. And the effect is that this time evolution, which appears there, it's no longer unitary. So it's instead of preserving the norm of the wave function, it contracts the norm. So the norm is decreasing. And then what we are doing, we simply say that this is extremely simple model in a sense. We just say that this loss of normalization of the wave function is the probability of absorption. This is the kind of same thinking that you have, for example, in this quantum Monte Carlo wave function approach. So this is extremely simple, and there we have the time. I mean, this is already defines the distribution of time then. This is the cumulative distribution function, and so then we can immediately, if we want, we can write down the observable, because if we subtract two of these things, then we can obviously write it in the form of this expectation value of this operator, which is defined like that. So that's the time observable. Now, we allow the case where, like I already said, we allow the case where not every particle is eventually absorbed. So this POEM is not normalized. There is a total absorption probability which might be smaller than one. So this limit there does not have to be zero. And so in order to get a probability density for the time distribution, then we have to normalize it. So this is more like, this is a conditional probability density of arrival at point T, at time T, given that the arrival happens at some point. So that's the the idea. And now, of course, the effect of this normalization is that we can think of this as an operational quantity. I mean, if you have a real detector, we can just take the click statistics and then normalize them. And then we can say, okay, this is our PET. Okay.
Go to zero?
Well, there's no, why should it go? I mean,
sorry?
Why should it go? I mean,
well, I guess intuitively, if you have an imaginary component in K, then as long as you have some non-zero eigenvalue for your state, I would have expected that infinite time would just be completely suppressed.
Yeah, well, in some cases it does, but I mean, in general, it's not true. I mean, you don't have need to have a.
I guess if it was an eigenstate of D, zero eigenstate of D, it wouldn't go to zero.
Mm-hmm.
What is D?
D is the.
D is the difference
ID
between a K
is
and.
What you add on the
I mean, in general, this does not have to go to zero.
Can you show the definition
I think
of K again? Just.
Yes. I mean, K is simply just a.
And D is any operator you like?
Yeah, well, it has to be positive.
So if D had only non-zero eigenvalues, would that be a situation wherein there would be probability one of absorption?
Well, okay, of course, D does not have to have eigenvalues at all. I mean, this can be a continuous situation and everything, but. Yeah, I mean, I see what you mean if you, this would be just the phase, this unitary part in some way. And then you would have here the suppression, exponential suppression. But I mean, this is an operator, it's not that simple.
I mean, if D was just a function of X and it was localized at the origin, and then you added a psi of X, which was zero in that region, then it would have no effect, presumably.
You would have a psi of X localized in where?
Localized outside the support of D.
Yeah, yes, then.
Except for the spreading. But I mean, couldn't you say, I mean, physically, intuitively, it seems like you could send in a wave packet from infinity and it passes by this complex region and then it goes off to infinity again and there'll be some finite probability that it got absorbed during that. And there'll be some very tiny probability that by wave practice
it'll
come back and
absorb,
but in general that you would expect it to reach infinity with finite probability.
Yeah, I mean you can think of it as some part of gets reflected and some part gets transmitted, and I guess transmitted part would then not correspond to the part which goes away. I mean you can for example have a delta potential. This would be a point-like detector. And there it basically happens that this P is always, it cannot be larger than 1/2, I think, just because I've calculated. So you definitely get situations where everything is not seen.
But it seems an interesting mathematical physics question. Why? How does it, I mean, despite that physical intuition, how does it manage to evade the effect of all these complex eigenvalues?
Yeah, but I mean,
I was talking about.
I mean, you cannot think in terms of eigenvalues anyway, because this can be a continuous system. So it doesn't need to have any eigenvalues.
Well, it has so this spectrum, you would say spectrum instead of eigenvalue. You might say it does, I mean, is D meant to be anything, self-adjoint or anything?
Well, it has to be positive, so D is self-adjoint.
So it has a spectrum, then, even if it doesn't have eigenvalues.
Yes, sure. Yes. Yeah, I agree, it's an interesting question. And we have been basically just looking for specific examples. I don't know if you can. What would be the general conditions for D in such a way that it would produce non smaller than 1p. But maybe we can at this point just be satisfied that this can happen. I mean, in any case, it's clear that a priori there is no. I mean, this could be something between 0 and 1. Okay, so then with this framework, it's perfectly clear what this various this expectation and the variance of time mean. So they are just computed from this distribution. And yeah, we also know what variance of energy is. So then the question is, can we prove this uncertainty relation? Now there comes this assumption that you actually mentioned already, that the psi has to be initially supported away from the detector. This is kind of physically, it's an obvious thing to assume, because if your wave function already has some overlap, then it doesn't really make sense to ask when it arrives, because it's already there. So this assumption is perfectly reasonable. And it turns out that with this assumption, we can show that these uncertainty relations are actually true. Okay.
Is delta H different from delta E?
Yeah, it's the same. I mean, we're just defining this. We're just using E here because that's the usual thing to do. I mean, this is nothing but, you could also put delta H if you want.
No, you put delta H on the right at the bottom. I was
wondering. Okay, yeah, sure. I mean, this is kind of a typo, but it's the same.
Can I ask one, Jeff? I mean, you kind of indicated you would like this time to be the first arrival time or something like that, but
yes,
that doesn't seem in some way justified, because if you think what the particle is actually doing, it could be going beyond the detector and missing it the first time, and then it could come back and be detected the second time, or it could miss it the second time, and so on and so on. It's some average time of being detected or something.
But yeah, but the first
it's
time.
Not the same as the first.
Yeah, but then it doesn't get detected in the first time. I mean, it just goes through. I mean, obviously the idea is that this is the first.
But how do you know it's the first? That's what I'm saying. I mean,
this is just a model. We are saying that it's the first time.
No, but what do you mean? Well, you can call it the first time. But
yes, I mean,
is there any physics in calling it the first time?
Well, I mean, well, this is a, like I said, this is a very crude model in the first place.
I mean, if I think of computing this by a path integral, there would be some paths that would go several times by the detector without being ceased, you know, without terminating, and then would terminate on the fifth.
Yeah, but this is not a question of where the particle physically moves. This is not relevant in this. I mean, the idea is simply just. I mean, of course, if the remaining potential is in such a way that it can go back, then what's wrong in absorbing it on the other side first time?
Sorry.
I mean, if the dynamics of the Hage is in such a way that it can go on the other side without being detected, then what's wrong with the absorbing it on the first, on the other side the first time?
Second time.
No, it's not absorbed, obviously, if it goes through.
No, what's wrong with it being the first time that it comes? Nothing, but it's not the first time that it arrived there, that's all I'm saying. It's not.
Yeah, but it's,
I'm just,
I mean, it's the arrival in the sense that the detector sees it at this point.
Okay.
I mean, of course, we always have to. We detect the arrival time by using this detector, so it doesn't make any sense to think when it actually passes through before the detector says it passes through. This is an operational way of thinking about it.
Well, I guess it's not a big one. I only said it because you said it wouldn't make sense to start with the wave function having some support in the
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
That seems inconsistent.
Yeah, but how is it? I mean, the thing is that, I mean, if you would start with the wave function being there at the beginning, then it would in some way be there already, some part of it in some sense. So it's not really, it would be not really clear to talk about the arrival, but if you put it somewhere else, then it's clear that it's not there at time zero. So this is why it sounds reasonable. But where it actually maybe move between, this is not what we are interested in, because this is part of the measurement is then already in progress, and we are not looking at the system at this time. So this is just a black box at this point. Okay. Okay, so now maybe I will try to do a little, I mean, I can of course skip some part of the proof. I mean, the idea is simply that we want to transform this, where we look at now only the simple case where P is 1. This makes it easy to prove the thing. So we want to transform it in such a way that this time distribution would actually be the square of some wave function. Then it would be in some sense a position distribution. And then we could use the standard uncertainty relation. And
that time would be like position.
Yeah, exactly. And now it turns out we can do it in this way, that with wave functions with values in H, not the usual wave functions, but the wave functions with values in the original Hilbert space. And well, if you start, we want to find this J, and we start from here calculating what P is. This is the definition of P. This goes kind of wrong way, maybe. And if you now differentiate this, then it's a clear short calculation shows that we end up with this. So the D only remains. There are two terms comes from this. And the Hamiltonian part just cancels. And if you look at this, then obvious way of interpreting it as a square of some wave function is to define J psi like this. Of course, you could put some phases there, but this would be a simple way of doing it. And this turns out to be enough. So J psi actually has values in H, obviously. Then now this assumption that we had at this point, it ensures that this function is actually continuous, because if you put t equals 0 here, this goes away and you get the square root d times psi, which is 0, because d psi is 0. So we have no jump at the origin, and this is actually important later when we differentiate it. Okay, but this comes from, because P is normalized. If we integrate, because we have this equality, and we know P integral of P is 1, then it follows that the integral of this thing is 1.
But is that the definition of J was the one above?
Yeah, sure.
The T. So this would give J star J equal to the explanation.
Yeah, I mean, this is just the calculation which proves that if we have this definition, then Pt is equal to the norm square of Jt.
Okay, because
and
there is T that is like X.
Yeah, sure. And now once we know that this is true, then we can integrate this in a, and then it just means that the wave, it's the integral of the square of the wave function is 1, which is the same as saying that J star J is 1. So
Sorry, what is H not L2 of R also? Is there a difference between H and L2 of R?
Yeah, well, H could be anything. It's just the original Hilbert space where this it's the Hilbert space where these H and D live. Here I have this picture, of course, kind of refers to L2 position space, but it could be anything else. It doesn't have to be this kind of situation. It's just some Hilbert space where the original, these original operators live. I mean, this is somehow, it's a general thing. Like I said, I have an example where H is just a 2x2 matrix. You can have a, yeah, C2. Okay. Yeah, okay, this I already got to this point, and then, well, the obvious thing now to do is we can, at least formally, I'm not discussing this in a philosophical sense, we can just call this a time operator in this space. So we just say that the multiplication by t on this L2 of r times h is called a time operator. And it's t hat denoted here. And well, it has an obvious conjugate h hat, which is defined in this way. So at this point, it doesn't have any connection to the original H yet. This is the definition of H hat. And for these, we obviously know that uncertainty relation holds, because these are just position and momentum by definition. And then, well, okay, then there's this other uncertainty relation which comes from the fact that our J psi is supported in the positive line. So then we get, for this, we can actually prove this other thing. If you want, I can explain it a little bit more, but it's just the way how to prove this is to convert this to a ground state problem. You can do it. You can also derive the standard uncertainty relation this way. So you take the, for the standard uncertainty relation, you take the Hamiltonian for the oscillator, this q square plus p square. Then you know that the expectation value is always bounded below by the ground state energy. And you can use this to derive the uncertainty relation. Now here you can, because this is now linear in the t, which is the same as q, the position. Here you can use the ground state problem of a particle in front of the wall in constant force field. So the linear potential, when you take the expectation of this, you know this bounded above by the eigenvalue, which you can compute when you know the eigenstate of this Hamiltonian, which is the Airy function. This is one of these basic examples in quantum mechanics one, that if you have a linear force, linear potential, then the solution of the Schrödinger equation is the Airy function. And no, this is just the method of deriving this inequality.
Yeah.
And this just refers to standard position and
yes, I understand. Thing. With the assumption that it's an eigenstate of a Hamiltonian with a linear potential.
Yeah, that would be the one which saturates this inequality. That would be the eigenstate would be the one which saturates this inequality. It yes. gives equality here. This would be the eigen.
Oh, I see. So right. So you okay?
Yes. And for all states, you know, I mean, of course, we know that this this is always bounded by the ground state energy. The expectation is always, for the Hamiltonian, is bounded by the lowest eigenvalue. And this inequality can be used to derive this sort of inequality, because here we are choosing the, our hate would be, in this latter case, our hate would be p squared plus some constant times q, because of the linear potential, and then we take the expectation values, and we know that this is at most the bottom eigenvalue, and from this you can turn it around in such a way that, because I mean that this is standard deviation, which is defined in terms of the second moment, and that's how it's related to this p square here, and this is now linear potential, so we corresponds to exactly this expectation value. In the harmonic oscillator case, we would have here the square, and then we get this variance also for the other variable. Okay, but this is a slightly side track. So now what we would have to do is to show that these hat quantities are related to the original variance and the expectation values, and then once we have established this, then we have the result. And then we have to compute basically this h hat applied to j psi, which is just the derivative. Because when we compute this, then it actually turns out that we can commute h hat past the j by just leaving the hat, and then we get this equality then follows immediately. So the only thing we have to do is just to differentiate this j psi, and to do that we need the fact that it does not have any jump at zero, because otherwise we would have some kind of delta contribution there. And this is a simple calculation. If you look at the definition of J, it was basically this part here without this. So when you differentiate, then this K drops down, and you see that it's actually the J applied to K psi. And now, because we have this assumption that the D is zero on psi, then it's the same as J H psi. And this basically gives the result. Then we also need this J star J to get rid of the J here. But that's basically the thing. And for the time, it's clear that we get, because we have defined the time distribution directly in such a way that the position expectation is equal to our time expectation. So these things are clear. So that's the way to get the result. Yeah, then this is a little bit, this is the where I would explain how to understand this case where p is not 1. So the idea is very simple. We just start with a system like we had before, where the p is 1, and then we add some part to the Hilbert space which is not seen by the detector. Then it's kind of obvious that we get some particles which just pass through, and the things we can always make this, and we can, when we make it in such a way that we, for example, we look at this sort of superposition, this is the original psi, and then we have here some some coefficient which is smaller than one, and then we can make it smaller than one because now we have this other part. And the thing is, when we do this sort of thing, then time distribution remains the same, because well, you can calculate the semigroup very easily. It just acts on the first part like it did before, and then on the second part, it only acts unitarily. So when you take the norm, then the second part doesn't contribute, and that's why the time distribution doesn't change. And from this, it also follows that the lambda, which you have chosen here as a coefficient in this superposition, this is exactly the the absorption probability that you would get for this new system. And if you think about the variance, then this part here does not have any variance because it's the eigenstate of, I have chosen the additional part in such a way that the vector is in the eigenstate of the Hamiltonian for this part, so it has no variance. So the only variance comes from the existing part, and here we have this coefficient which is smaller than one, so then it decreases, it appears in the variance and decreases it. So that's just the way of understanding why. How we can, for example, arrive at this scenario where the P appears. Okay, maybe I will just. I have only two more slides. So there's basically one interesting question which arises from this uncertainty relation, which is to find the like I already said in the beginning, to find the states which saturate them. And obviously you can start by looking at this time space. There everything is standard position and momentum thing. So we know that the time space wave functions which saturate this, they are just Gaussians. And the wave function which saturate this thing is like a sort of try to explain, they are given by this Airy function. And now the question which we actually haven't done yet, and which you cannot do this in general, you have to take some particular k and then do it in this case. But for example, it would be interesting to look at the delta potential and like point-like absorption, to see what kind of wave function would saturate this thing. And what you would obviously have to do would be to look at this definition then and try to invert this. And you put here, for example, this Airy function, and then we like to know what sort of size then would produce this function. Okay, so that was just the sort of remark. Then I would like to give this simplest example. So if we take Hamiltonian, this is just it's just sigma x. But this could mean, for example, if you take two-level atom which is driven by some laser, then this describes these Rabi oscillations. And of course, what would happen here is that if you put the particle in the lower level, or the excitation in the lower level, then it will, at some point, it will, the probability of the upper level would increase. And now, in this scheme, you would choose the d as a gamma times the projection onto the upper level. This would then be correspond to absorption at this upper level. So this would be the time of arrival to the upper level of this particle, physically. And well, okay, this is just a computation. You have 2x2 matrices. You can compute easily this exponential matrix and then differentiate. You get some pt. And well, then you have some freedom because you have two constants. So you can choose, try to choose gamma in such a way. If you fix the omega, then you can choose the h bars, of course. You can just put it in equal to 1, and then you can try to find gamma in such a way that you would get as small uncertainty product as possible. Delta E would then, delta E is always this thing here. And it turns out that the minimum, you get minimum with this h bar over square root of 2, which is, and it's a little bit over the theoretical minimum. And with this other uncertainty, you actually, you get even closer. You get square root of 2 times h bar, which is something like 3% of the absolute minimum. And what is interesting here, you can plot the pt. This is the solid line here. And then you can compare it with this minimum t, which minimum pt, which is exactly this. I think we chose this. The time distribution which gives the minimal uncertainty product in this relation.
Is there any specific insight you're hoping for by analyzing these minimum uncertainty packets? Or is it mostly a test to see how close you can get to the...
Yeah, I mean, it's experimental. This experimental test or what? I mean, of course, experimentally it's not really so interesting to test about uncertainty relations because we kind of know that this has to be true. But the interesting thing would be to I mean, these are not obviously not any experimental result. This is just calculated from this model. But it would be still interesting to see how close we can get. And here it's kind of with this model you should get in the second relation, like 3% to the absolute minimum. And then you can see here that the corresponding time distributions, they are really close to these minimizing ones. So that's one reason why we would like to try to find them. I haven't really described this feasible experimental model, which was proposed by P. Smith, which was one of the authors here. It involves some excitations in a calcium ion or something like this. But the idea is that you could basically realize this simple case in experiment.
Isn't P equal to 1 in this example?
Yes.
So you don't test saturation of the uncertainty relation
in this case
p less than 1.
Sure, that's we haven't yet, that's one thing, we haven't yet found an example where we could test this uncertainty relation with the p there. So here the p is really smaller than equal to 1. But actually, if you look at this more realistic scheme, which I haven't talked about, then there the p would be a little bit smaller than 1, but this is mostly mostly within the experimental errors anyway, so you cannot really, within this model you cannot talk about the effect of the absorption, of the incomplete absorption.
Because for finite state systems like this, it seems like Rob's argument really would apply. You know? P would always be 1, or generically always 1.
Yeah, okay, I would have to. Yeah, well, yeah, I guess it. Yeah, okay, I would need some time to work it out, but. Yeah, then of course you have always eigenstates because it's a finite system. And yeah, I guess it's probably true that in this case it's always.
I mean, if you just took a 3-level system and you just had the Hamiltonian with a 1 in the bottom left-hand corner.
Yeah, I mean, of course, you can always
0 in D.
Yeah, you can. Yeah, I mean, of course, you can. Like I explained, you can always add some other part which is not seen by the detector, and then you always get smaller P, smaller than 1. So it's. I mean, this is of course obvious, but. But if you choose the D in such a way that it kind of yeah, no, you can always have also in a finite system you can always have situations where P is smaller than 1. Which was precisely this argument that I presented here. You can always add some eigenvector here this way, and then you get, you can just add, yeah, like you said, you can just add 1 more level, and then.
But that's why I was thinking generically it would, in other words, some specially fine-tuned D or something, and H, maybe it would be less than 1.
Yeah, but I mean, like I said, this in this more feasible scheme with calcium levels, there you would have more levels. You have more sort of pumping lasers, and that's why you have more levels. There you have P smaller than 1. But in this case, it's not significantly small. It was not significantly smaller than 1. So that's, but I mean, of course, we are still sort of thinking. Oh, okay, so thanks. So we are still thinking of this more complete experimental setups in this quest. But of course, somebody would have actually had to do the experiment. Otherwise, it's not really so interesting. About it. One thing which we will definitely do is we look at these point-like detectors with the delta potential. There you have P smaller than 1. It's one thing which we haven't yet done. I mean, you can basically you can calculate everything fairly explicitly in this delta case. And then you could even characterize this minimum uncertainty wave functions. Of course, in this case, if you look at the D here, then it's not an operator in this case, obviously. But you can see, if you put the delta in place of D, then you can still make sense of K as an operator by putting in some boundary conditions and choosing the domain. I mean, that's how you deal with point potentials anyway. To choose some suitable extension of the symmetric operator that you get when you put the boundary conditions which correspond to delta function. The derivative has to jump. If you put the delta at the origin, then it means that the derivative of the wave function has to jump there. And when this is just condition on the domain of this this contraction generator.
I think we should thank you. Yeah,
but you have a question.
Yes.
Yes. No, we start.
So I was wondering if you thought about how you describe this same model of absorption using the formalism of quantum instruments.
You mean that you would also think of what happens to the particle afterwards? I mean, this would be like the instrument or.
Well, what I'm imagining is,
I mean, here the idea is somehow obviously that the particle is destroyed after the. But you can. I mean, one thing you can do is you can also measure something else at the absorption time. You can, for example, it doesn't have to be only time. You could have some other degrees of freedom. You could measure the spin or. Or you could measure the location where it gets absorbed. If this is not localized, then it makes sense, for example, to ask where it. And if you would have two-dimensional setting, then you would naturally ask at which point of the detector it. So then you would have additional degrees of freedom. And you would describe this sort of situation, and then you would have some. Hilbert space at detection time, so you would have a system which would be at this detection time, it would be described by the wave function on this Hilbert space, which would contain the additional degrees of freedom, and then you could have observables there which you would measure. But I didn't understand the instrument.
Well, okay, maybe the answer to my question is that you're not interested in what happens to the particle down the line.
Yeah,
so
sure.
So really, you're only
ultimately
you should only have a POVM.
The idea is that here is that really that it's like a black box during this measurement process.
Mm-hmm.
You just prepare it here. And then, I mean, it's not really a wave function in the meantime, because the norm is decreasing and you don't really, it's not totally clear what it would mean in the meantime.
Yeah.
So you're just really only interested in modeling this measurement.
So I guess I have a confidence that almost any model can be redescribed using POVMs and instruments. And so I feel that there ought to be a way of describing this using the standard language of POVMs rather than complex Hamiltonians.
Yeah, but I mean, I have the POVM right here. I mean, I did.
Yeah.
This is exactly the described in the standard formalism.
So then, can you describe what the Neumark extension of the POVM would be and how I should think about?
Yeah, well, the thing is, here the Neumark extension doesn't really bring much because, I mean, obviously you have different Neumark extensions anyway. I mean, we haven't really tried to think what would be the reasonable extension in this case because it doesn't, the correct dilation is this J, because this brings us to the canonical operators, space where we have canonical operators. This is not, it's not Neumann dilation. This is some, I think in some cases it's the same as the, I don't know if you know this book, functional analysis book by Nagy or something like some. This is one of these old basic functional analysis books, and there he has some dilation with in some I don't remember now in which case, but in some cases this this really reduces to this sort of dilation. So the thing is, this is not a Neimann dilation.
But here's a guess I have as to how something like this might come out. It doesn't quite do justice to what you said, but imagine that I just do a standard measurement on the particle, a couplet, some other degree of freedom, and if I get the measurement, then the system is destroyed. But some of the time, you know, the outcome says, no, you didn't find it, and so you now update to the state where you didn't find it.
This is the Monte Carlo wave function method.
So if I discretize time, I could imagine that your evolving unnormalized wave function could also be described as just, you know, the wave function that I should update to, assuming I got the outcome that said I didn't detect it.
Yeah, this is exactly the would be the no event.
Right.
And then if you would have more events, you would have a Lindblad generators, you know. And then you could do more complicated things. I mean, you could say that when the particle gets absorbed, then some event occurs, and each event would be associated to one Lindblad operator. This is what you would do in this Monte Carlo. I don't know if you, I mean, quantum optics, there is this way of
quantum trajectories.
Where you can use it in various, like I guess in quantum optical applications, it's used pretty commonly, but yeah. I mean, this complex potential approach is not our invention in any way, somehow. Like I said, in principle, it already, in the context of time, it appears here in this Sarbox paper in some way, and it's the same as same ideas in the Monte Carlo method. Get us now.
So is it well known how to express this in the quantum trajectories formalism?
Well, I would say this idea of absorbing semigroup is the Monte Carlo method in some way. I mean, of course, this is just a part of it. It's just a no-event semigroup. You would have then more complicated events.
I mean, I'm imagining a derivation of the master equation from some model of the coupling to the apparatus. Like in other cases, like quantum optical master equation,
in
a textbook and find the derivation. So is there somewhere where this comes out as the master equation in a sort of null detection scenario? Is there a standard reference on that, or?
No, I mean, we have always just been using this paper because, I mean, the thing, like I said, that from this detection scheme, from this point of view, it's also interesting if you can measure something else than just time. And that's why, that's basically done in this paper, and that's why we are using this formalism. And then, because of this, I mean, you could think of more general things and so on, but as it appears here, just this complex potential thing, this is nothing new. I cannot tell any reference at the top of my head, but
I'll have a look.
I mean, it appears in slightly different forms in various contexts.
So a related question, I think. I mean, you might think, if you think in this way that Rob was talking about, you might think that there should be kind of Zeno effect if the detector became
very efficient.
Would that be like sending the complex potential to infinity? Or? Do you see such a Zeno effect? Or?
Yeah, but the Zeno effect would mean that you would be continuously monitoring it.
Well, it is.
Okay. Yeah, but okay. I mean, in some way we are not. I mean, the idea is, of course, this is a, to some extent, interpretational question. We are just saying that it's a black box. We are not looking at the system. We just listen when the detector clicks. And another, I mean, this the Sino thing is usually you would say I mean, let's say your detector sits here in the same picture, and then you would at some time T1, T2, and so on, you would make a position measurement at this region to check that the particle is there. This would then, I guess, induce some sort of Zeno effect. You would check with regular intervals whether the particle is there. But this is not really, we are not...
Well, I'm not saying it is the same, but if in fact there is some model of it in that, in terms of measurements, then it seems like it is kind of like that.
I'm
not saying there is such a model, but if there is such a model, then it seems very analogous, because with a very large complex potential, that's giving it a sort of a probability one of getting absorbed as soon as it reaches the detector region.
Yeah, but I mean...
So you might think that that's analogous to... If there is, in fact, such a model, you might think that in that model, that would correspond to doing very rapid measurements.
I'm not saying that you could not get this from such a detailed model. I mean, this is rather abstract.
No, but I'm asking whether in this abstract thing you see any analog. In other words, if in fact there is a correspondence between these two approaches, and on the other approach, it seems like there is some Zeno effect. Whether you can observe some sort of Zeno effect in this model.
Yeah, well, we are more like, maybe the more detailed model, we would be more like thinking about this idea that you have some atom which is in the detector surface. And when the photon, let's say the particle which comes here is a photon, it excites the atom, which then decays spontaneously to some lower level, and then you have this cascade reaction. And there you would not say that you are measuring things. I mean, in this model, you are just waiting that it happens. You're not looking at the system. So there, I don't see, in this way of thinking, I wouldn't see any Zeno effect. You are just waiting that the system interacts and produces this click.
If I can comment, I mean,
maybe you can.
So just as we're on this, assuming we're on the same page, I mean, if you discretize time and said, I do a measurement every time, ask whether the particle's there or not, and either destroy it or not, then you can sort of have a branching tree of all the possibilities.
Yes.
And this is really describing that branch where you never find it. You know, over and over again, you just don't find it.
Yeah.
So in a quantum Zeno effect, you can imagine the probability of actually finding it could go to zero. And so it seems to me in that limit, you would have no complex term in the Hamiltonian because there'd be no absorption. Oh. But the nature of the Hamiltonian would then be dictated by the kind of coupling to the bath you have. So that would be sort of the Zeno effect, that your coupling now, it allows you to kind of craft the Hamiltonian so that it doesn't decay naturally, for example, but stays excited.
Okay, yeah. Well, I cannot follow it now, but maybe you can explain it a little bit. But just to say that the way we have been thinking about it, we are not thinking about Zeno effect. But I mean, yeah, I'm not saying that you could not think about it in such a way.
So I have another question about, it wasn't clear to me what you were claiming when you talked about the non-zero, you know, the second part of the derivation when you derive the uncertainty relation with p that's not equal to 1. And you talked about saturation. You said you didn't know what the wave function that saturated it was, but did you actually prove that there is such a wave function that saturates it?
No, it doesn't have to be. I mean, this, if you look at this j, there is no, I mean, this is obviously where there is no guarantee that this would be surjective. I mean, it doesn't have to.
I mean, is it possible that the way that?
I mean, if you want to fix this part here, then you cannot be sure that that you can find the psi which actually hits this particular choice. This usually, I mean, this doesn't have to happen. But of course, you could think that you have some, you can somehow approximate. So maybe the relevant range here is dense in the. I mean, it wouldn't have to be exactly in the range. It could be that you can always approximate, and this would already be.
Is it possible that the ordinary uncertainty relation always applies, or have you ruled that up? I mean, even though you haven't proved it. Suppose P is a half, or a tenth of something. Could it be that the regular uncertainty relation still applies, or do you actually have examples where you beat the ordinary uncertainty relation?
I mean with the... Yeah, but this would be related to this P then, obviously.
But do you have examples where delta E delta T is actually less than H bar over 2?
Yeah, well, it's at the moment it's kind of, I mean, we were trying to find this with this delta detector. That's why we were sort of trying to characterize this state which would saturate the uncertainty relation. But well, at the moment...
Well, saturate is one thing, but I'm just saying to go below a half.
Yeah, but that would be an obvious way of proceeding somehow.
Oh, if you saturated it, you would, of course. I'm just asking it's
easier
question.
But at the moment we haven't really managed to find the explicitly characterize these sort of wave functions. But I mean, because you can always get the P, like I explained here, I would expect that it eventually one finds an explicit example where it really beats the ordinary uncertainty relation.
But do you have even an existence theorem that you can beat the ordinary uncertainty relation?
Well, at the moment we don't have any.
Because it seems a little strange that you would, in some way. I don't know why exactly.
Well, that's because you were assuming that usually it's supposed to be. Yeah, but I mean, if you assume ideal detectors, then it's just an ordinary thing. So I don't see why. I mean, obviously, if you allow absorption, it's not so surprising if you change the uncertainty relation.
I suggested that we conclude here the formal part of the seminar and maybe we continue with the formal discussions.
Okay.
So let's thank you again.